Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles. This is an Inside Digital Health podcast. We are big fans of you at Inside Digital Health. So if you're big fans of this podcast, be sure to rate, subscribe, and review.
Today we have a very special guest, and that is Artie Rye. And she is the Elvin R. Laddie Professor of Law and the Faculty Director at Duke Law's Center for Innovation Policy.
So in case you haven't scanned the headlines this past week, we've got some big news for you. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, the FDA's commissioner, resigned last week after less than 2 years on the job.
The Washington Post broke the story on Tuesday afternoon, and just about every other news outlet in the country picked it up shortly after.
A lot of this coverage about Gottlieb's legacy centered on his crusade against electronic cigarettes and vaping. And that angle made sense for a mainstream audience, definitely. After all, there's a teenage vaping epidemic going on, and pretty much everyone knows someone who's addicted to nicotine.
But for us, for the health IT and innovation crowd, reflections on Gottlieb's work at the FDA just didn't need to mention Juul. Vaping just wasn't the big story.
So then what should the coverage have focused on? What should we remember about him, Jack?
The short answer is digital health.
Yeah, I agree. Digital health. Under Gottlieb, we saw the FDA greenlight marketing of an early prescription digital therapeutic that was Reset, by the way, which is used to treat patients with substance abuse disorder. And it helped open the floodgates for these medical apps.
Last year, the FDA also cleared the IDX DR, and that's an autonomous system that uses AI to diagnose diabetic retinopathy. And that's right, I said diagnose, not identify.
Yeah, it's a pretty important distinction. So under Gottlieb, the FDA also started developing a software pre-certification program to allow for speedier updates. The regulator launched an app focused on gathering real-world evidence, and it also made moves to improve medical device security.
Look, we're not trying to toot Gottlieb's horn here. He has his critics, including some Democratic lawmakers, and they say that Gottlieb's FDA gave too much power to device makers and software developers at the risk of patient safety.
And then there are others who argue that even with its focus on digital health innovation, the FDA is still lagging wildly behind where it should be.
But the point is, the FDA is a different regulator than it was when Gottlieb took the reins.
And the question is, what's next for this agency that holds so much power over our hospitals, our innovators, our clinicians, and our patients?
To get a better feel for how the FDA might evolve, we're going to take a look at how the FDA has evolved.
It's a story of big steps and half steps, accomplishments and shortcomings, and yes, adaptation to a whole lot of innovation.
Now, this is not a comprehensive look at the FDA. If you're interested in learning more, there's a lot of good stuff out there. You can check out some of the sources that we viewed to help make this podcast possible. There are pieces published by Harvard, FDAreview.org, the Smithsonian, even the FDA itself.
So the primitive roots of what we know as the FDA today took hold way back in the 1800s. Back then, the idea of regulating drugs was more revolutionary than the act itself.
In 1862, a little-known president named Abraham Lincoln appointed...
Maybe you guys have heard of him before.
Maybe. But he appointed a chemist to the Department of Agriculture's Bureau of Chemistry. Look, only a few people worked in this group, and they didn't really do that much. They kind of just demanded customs inspections of food and drugs.
Then 20 years later, Dr. Harvey W. Wiley comes along. He took over as chief chemist of the Bureau. He started pushing for federal law that would give his team greater authority.
So here's a line from FDAReview.org's synopsis that I really like. Quote, "A common pattern in the history of federal drug control has been the shocking event that unleashes new governmental powers," end quote.
And in 1901, that shocking event came in the form of contaminated smallpox vaccines. These led to tetanus outbreaks and a number of dead children. The next year, Congress passed the Biologics Act, which cemented pre-market approvals for biologic drugs and their manufacturers. It was a first for the U.S.
Another big moment in the timeline came just 4 years later, in 1906. Upton Sinclair's muckraking book, The Jungle, had just terrified the public, and so had Wiley, who actually poisoned himself, along with a group of volunteers, to show the bad health effects of certain chemicals.
So Congress passes the Pure Food and Drugs Act, which tried to tighten labeling and information surrounding food, drugs, and drinks. But many of the standards placed on drugs were already being used by physicians, so the big thing here was cutting back on misinformation.
Eventually, this goes to court, and it comes out that the law doesn't ban false therapeutic claims, just bogus statements about a drug's ingredients or identity. In 1912, Congress prohibits manufacturers from defrauding patients by making junk claims on a drug's label.
Over the next 15 or so years, the regulatory landscape continues to evolve. Food, drugs, labeling, they're all going in and out of the courts and Congress. And through all this, we still do not have the FDA.
This doesn't happen until 1930, after a name change and a shakeup of the Bureau of Chemistry. Almost right off the bat, the FDA begins advocating for an overhaul of the Pure Food and Drugs Act.
But it didn't gain any real momentum until 1937. That's when a new antibacterial drug hit the market after going through a bunch of quality and safety tests. But its maker didn't cover all of its bases, and the liquid form of this drug turned out to be antifreeze.
And you can imagine how that turned out. It affected the kidneys of dozens and dozens of people, and it killed more than 100 of them, most of whom were children.
Just a few months later, Congress passed the Food, Drugs, and Cosmetic Act of 1938. It did a lot, from mandating pre-market approvals and totally barring false therapeutic claims to boosting food safety powers.
And the new law also did something that would go on to have pretty big implications for the digital health space, for the prescription digital therapeutics and AI diagnostic systems we see today. This new law gave the FDA authority over the review and regulation of medical devices.
So here's the thing about that. While the FDA got regulatory power over medical devices in 1938, it was a very different system. As you see, the FDA didn't have pre-approval authority, so it was forced to go after problematic or fraudulent device makers in the courts.
As time went on, medical devices began to flood the market. Pacemakers, kidney dialysis machines, you name it. And patients suffered more and more problems as these devices became more and more common.
Now, the FDA tries to pull together some stopgap solutions to regulate medical devices before they enter the clinic. Sometimes these work, sometimes they didn't.
Finally, in 1976, Congress amended the 1938 law to make medical devices subject to pre-market review and whatever else that applied to drugs. These amendments defined what a medical device was, and they made it pretty broad so that we wouldn't really run into this in-between Wild West space again.
And what do you know? It turns out that 1976 was not the final year of healthcare innovation.
Oh, you don't say.
Who'd have thunk it?
Well, way down the road, and we are fast-forwarding quite a bit, it's 2016, and Congress passed the 21st Century Cures Act, which did a lot to clarify how the FDA is supposed to regulate medical software. The gist of it, certain software functions were not considered medical devices while others were.
Now, this came at a time when digital health innovation was really beginning to take off. It was time to modernize the FDA. Software developers and healthcare innovators needed to know what they could and couldn't do.
So by mid-2017, Scott Gottlieb was in charge of the FDA. It was his job to make sense of all this wild digital health stuff.
We're talking about wearables, mHealth apps, telemedicine platforms, AI and other types of medical software, cybersecurity, and so on. This is a tall order for one person.
So soon enough, we started seeing digital health action plans, pilot programs for new regulatory pathways, prescription digital therapeutics, different approaches to data, so on and so forth.
The innovators and their technologies and the lawmakers and their FDA had all begun to change. The regulators started looking like a much different organization than the one that only tried to stop poison additives and contaminated food back in the day. All of a sudden, it was teaming up with companies like Apple and Fitbit to forge this crazy new path forward.
Now, we can debate whether each individual step along the journey was right or wrong. We can argue over how quickly or slowly Gottlieb moved in trying to adapt to this brave new world, but it's hard to argue this. The FDA isn't straight up blocking advances in medical software. it's actually clearing companies to market these apps and systems.
So, as with the vaccine contaminations and food processing horror stories of the past, we saw a tremendous change that spurred real action.
To examine Scott Gottlieb's legacy at the FDA, what the regulator needs to do going forward, and what this change means from a digital health perspective, I brought in Artie Rai. Artie is the Elvin R. Laddie Professor of Law and the Faculty Director at the Center for Innovation Policy at Duke Law. She's an internationally recognized expert in IP law, innovation policy, administrative law, health law. Artie's work has been published in peer-reviewed journals and law reviews. I'm talking about Science, the New England Journal of Medicine, so on and so forth. And Artie knows the FDA. So Artie Rai, thank you for joining us today on Databook.
You're welcome.
To start with a more ambitious question, what do you consider Scott Gottlieb's legacy as it pertains to digital health and the FDA?
I think it's fair to say that many people would view his introduction of this pilot program for software as perhaps his biggest legacy. It's still a pilot program, but it's quite innovative in terms of thinking about a different way of regulating software, given that software changes so quickly and needs to be updated and doesn't necessarily fit well with the ordinary medical device model. So I think that everyone thinks it's innovative, whether one disagrees with the approach or not is a different question, but I think everyone would say it was innovative, and it's a very interesting way of thinking about regulation.
All right. So under Gottlieb, the FDA took on a number of digital health initiatives, and it also cleared advances ranging from direct-to-consumer genetic tests, autonomous diagnostic systems, to prescription digital therapeutics. Beyond the pre-cert program, what are some of Gottlieb's FDA's most notable steps forward?
I would say that the work that he did on AI-enabled health, I know it's an overused word, but the number of approvals in the artificial intelligence space is, again, for better or for worse, really quite remarkable in terms of the number of pieces of software that rely upon some type of deep learning or AI machine learning-enabled programming. So that, I think, is probably his most, from my perspective anyway, his most notable accomplishment already, in the sense that it's already been accomplished. And I think that firms are feeling fairly comfortable with the process by which it has been done. Now, whether consumers will feel equally confident and comfortable is a question that has received some attention of late, including in some fairly prominent journals. But I think it's got to be considered in the area of data a very important accomplishment.
And where in the digital health realm have Gottlieb and the FDA fallen short or made mistakes?
It's hard for me to say, actually, because I've been very impressed on the whole. And so the only question would be, and I can't say that I necessarily agree with this criticism, but the only question would be with respect to some of the approvals of the machine learning enabled software. Were the populations on which the train from which the training data was drawn, and or the level of vetting of the programming, was that sufficient? There has been some recent back and forth on that question by physicians and scientists and so forth, and so I can't necessarily speak to that since I'm not a trained AI specialist, but there has been some back and forth on that question with respect to those approvals.
How will we remember Gottlieb and his time at the FDA? Was he an innovator?
Yes. Yes. I think that would be unequivocally true. I don't think anyone would say that he was not. Whether you would agree with all of his innovations is a different question, but I think it's unequivocally true that he was a major innovator. And I think, consequently, I am concerned about the future of things like the pre-cert program, which I think is very interesting and could be a real dramatic transformation of the way FDA does business.
You read my mind. So looking forward, what types of initiatives, such as the pre-cert program, do you hope the next FDA commissioner will prioritize, and why?
So I think the pre-cert program is a major one, because we are moving to an era, or perhaps we've already moved to an era, where everything that's interesting in the medical device world is software enabled. And the goal of the pre-cert program is to start with software as a standalone medical device, but then move perhaps to, even to use the term of art that the FDA uses, software in a medical device, which I think is a good way to think about things. And then perhaps even moving further out, although beyond the scope of data, but thinking about how this might work for non-data enabled products, but that's a very far in the future. So I think that it'll be important for the next commissioner to really engage fully with the pilot, and in addition, have the kind of a relationship with different constituencies that allows bridging of differences and also threading what could be a relatively fine or narrow needle with respect to regulatory authority, because the regulatory authority to engage in the pre-cert program, and here I'll put my lawyer hat on, I think is there, but one has to make some good arguments about the scope of it. And there's already been some concern that perhaps the scope of the regulatory authority is not quite there, in which case Congress might have to do something which might not be the most efficient way to go, given the pace of congressional legislation.
What do you consider the consequences of failing to install some type of pre-cert program?
I think that there will be uncertainty, and that is what the market hates, as we all know. It seems to me that uncertainty regarding, and again, my focus and my research is right now on AI-enabled medical devices. So the 21st Century Cures Act leaves a fair amount of uncertainty regarding exactly how the FDA should do the regulation. And it seemed to me that Gottlieb was on a very good track to try to resolve some of that uncertainty. And I think he had the authority under the Cures Act to do it, notwithstanding some concerns that perhaps it didn't give him full authority. I think he actually does have, the FDA more generally has the authority. So that, I think, is something that we have to watch very carefully. And if the uncertainty is not resolved expeditiously, it seems to me that there could be delays in venture capital investment, in all the sorts of stuff that we think is important, especially for small firms. The larger firms can deal with uncertainty better, but smaller firms are really struggle to deal with uncertainty.
Earlier in this episode, we detailed a history in brief of some of the FDA's most dramatic moments. Can you describe to me the moment we're in now, given the state of innovation in healthcare?
I think it's an inflection point, and I hesitate to say that because, you know, one doesn't want to overhype the moment. And certainly AI in particular, I think, has been hyped significantly, perhaps overhyped in some respects. But I think in this era, we are at an inflection point with respect to how to think carefully and responsibly about these issues. And one has to be both attentive to safety concerns and also attentive to the needs of the market. And to find somebody who can balance those considerations, I think, is difficult. And so given that inflection point, the next FDA commissioner will have to be somebody who has some pretty big shoes to fill.
Going beyond the next commissioner, what does the ideal FDA look like when it comes to nurturing, but also holding accountable innovation?
So I think the FDA needs to engage, and has been begun to engage, I should say, much more fully with the entire life cycle of innovative products. So not just pre-market, but also post-market. And I think the FDA has begun to recognize that, certainly through programs like Sentinel and so forth. But I think there could be a lot more done in that respect. And there's a big literature now, which the academics love, because we love to think big thoughts like this, about adaptive regulation and how you continually tweak the regulation to be sensitive to the type of technology that's emerging in the field. And that, of course, requires giving a lot of discretion to agencies like the FDA, which also requires, on the part of Congress, trust of the FDA. And I think the FDA, on the whole, has earned that trust. And so it seems to me that Congress has, to some extent, but could even more, give FDA discretion to engage in that sort of innovation ecosystem regulation. Now, one area where people have complained that it has fallen down a bit on the job is related to the post-market review. But I do think that the FDA recognizes that. And in order to get the authority and the trust that needs to have a, you know, have the ramp be less steep at the front end, it needs to do more surveillance at the back end.
Artie Rye, thank you for joining us on Databook.
You are very welcome.
So to Scott Gottlieb, the general of generic drugs, the dignitary of digital health, and the indomitable defender of children's lungs from the scourge of insidious vape clouds, farewell.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Databook. Thank you for that poetry, Tom.
Well, he's from my hometown of East Brunswick, New Jersey. So, you know, I had to go hard for
it.
Had to get it in.
Look, if you like this episode, rate, subscribe, review, check us out online at iDigitalHealth.com, MedTechBoston.com.
And also come find us on our social handles. I'm at the Tom Castles and Jack is at Jack Murtha.
So I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles.
And this is Databook.